I am Ron Whitmore, and this is Evanston Rules. Today, Laurice Bell and I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Marcus Campbell, the first black male superintendent ever to be appointed at District 202, Evanston Township High School. Wow. Listen as Marcus shares his experiences as an educator and how he ascended to the role of superintendent. Marcus shares his reality about growing up in the inner city. He talks about his passion for education and how he's committed to making Evanston everything that it says it is with regard to equity, access, and opportunity. He keeps himself grounded by having pictures of his ancestors surrounding him in his office. Listen to understand.
Hello, Dr. Marcus Campbell.
And welcome to Evanston Rules.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
From the moment it was announced that you were the superintendent of Evanston Township High School, our alma mater, we have wanted to have you as a guest on Evanston Rules. I might say prior to the announcement, just knowing you as an educator and having Ron talk about you has left us wanting you as one of our guests. So welcome. Welcome to Evanston Rules. Congratulations on being the first black male superintendent of Evanston Township High School.
Wait, I got to say that again. The first black male superintendent.
That's right.
Of Evanston Township High School. 132 years?
I think 134 years or something.
134 like years. Thousands upon thousands of black people, students going through that school. Why'd it take so long?
First, thank you for having me. And takes so long because those systems of oppression are strong and they are real and rigid and very restrictive. And so I want to thank the community and thank the board for taking such a powerful step forward and naming me as the superintendent. It is not lost on me that I'm the first black man to do this job. And part of my process, you know, I was asking even the board, how do you support a black man in this role that's never been here before? And I'm happy to be in a community like Evanston, where we can talk about these issues in that way now. My entire professional career has been here at ETHS. And I gotta say, and I mean this sincerely, Brother Whitmore, educators like you paved the way for brothers like me to be in this role in this community. You know, so that's the truth. And people listening to this podcast know that that's the truth. So I really appreciate your pioneering work as a black male educator in this community and in the Chicagoland area and what you do all over the country. So those systems are real and we're breaking through. There's still a ton of more work that needs to be done in our community and in communities like ours all over the country.
One, I humbly appreciate those kind words. I understood that the Billy Cherries and the Elmore Johnsons and the Claire and Ed Pape and the Oliver Ruffs.
Yeah, and the Joseph Hills.
And the Joseph Hills.
Don Michelin.
And the Don Michelin. Bob Boss.
Yeah, Bob
Boss. And the Noreen Winningham saw something in me. And in their love for me, there was an unwritten goal or commitment to being able to pay it forward.
When you hear those words that you have people who have your back, and those who have walked in front of you, who know the walk and understand where you stand today. How does that feel?
You know, it feels reassuring. What you can't see in my office is that I am surrounded by the voices of my ancestors, our ancestors. There are quotes of letters of former slaves who were writing while on the Underground Railroad. And they're up on the walls, they're up high. So you gotta look up and see them, you know, because I'm being covered by them or protected by them. And their sacrifices enabled all of us to be here. And I've got my family and my friends and my fraternities all on the walls, all around me. And that is the reassurance, right? That is the community to which you all are speaking to and speaking about, that guides me, that lifts me, that supports me, that inspires me. And I'm grateful for it. You know, these words that are up on the walls over me, we are their wildest imagination, right? And I am just deeply grateful and humble, but also feel the responsibility of what it means to be connected to such a strong and resilient community, not just here in Evanston, and here for what our ancestors laid out for us. I don't look at that history as just a troubled, challenging history. I look at it as a resilient, strong history as well.
So we're a town of reparations. We're a town of the gap in education. We're a town where the Black population is dwindling
rapidly.
But not only did you make history being the first Black male, we have the first Black female chief of police in our town. What is your hope for Evanston?
My hope for Evanston may sound simple, but it's complex. My hope for Evanston is justice, right? Justice for the kids who are struggling, and some are struggling learning to read. Justice for the kids who have been marginalized and unseen and unheard and misunderstood for a long time. But I think because of everything that you just named, if there's no other city in this country that is able to do it, Evanston can do it just because of what you just named. I think that we are very powerfully positioned to really make progress and to be progressive and to serve our community in ways that it hasn't been served before, and do it in the means and by means to which of what this time in history requires, right? Because this time in history requires a different response from some of those that came before us, because if they didn't make the sacrifices and the contributions that they made, we wouldn't be here. But this time requires for a different set of ideas and innovations and visions and considerations so that we pay it forward. And I think it's possible. I think it's so possible.
The positivity in that statement speaks in so many ways to what it means to be Black, believing, being positive in the face of much that has come before us that hasn't worked out, whether it was integration in the schools in Evanston that happened, but to what effect, and who really gained from that. Being at the forefront is such a powerful position. How do we take it to the other side? What can we do as a community to support those goals?
I think that in some ways, righting the wrongs of what has occurred in the past is one way to do that. For example, we now have a Fifth Ward school that we have not had in multiple generations. And there have been many attempts to make that happen, and it just hadn't happened. And the community at this particular time supported that in ways that maybe hadn't been supported by some in the past, you know, who knows? Because some people, they talk about equality, they believe in equality, and they talk about equity, and they say they believe in equity, but what they really believe is inequality. And what I mean by that is the moment that people, a population of students starts to get something that somebody else doesn't get, then they immediately say, well, that's not fair and that's not equity. Well, it's not equity, because equity means that some people get more than others. And that's been the history of what our education system, what our criminal justice system, what our healthcare system, all of these systems have benefited those who have gotten more and have access to more than others have, and that hasn't necessarily been fair. So to right the wrongs and begin to pour resources where they are needed, that is what this community really needs to support. Even if it doesn't seem fair, look fair, it's not equality, it's equity. And that's what the community needs.
Ronnie always talks about equity in action and working those steps as long as I've known him. He also talks about how we start from behind, and when we get anywhere close to the finish line is moved.
Yeah, he's right about that.
I mean, so we lean into the diversity, the inclusion, the equity, All the descriptives that are used to get us focused on the consistency of institutionalism. It's a consistent mindset. It's consistent tears. It's consistent victimization, the perception of being the victims. I was talking to a brilliant mind today, and she said, we need to stop asking for it. I'm going to quote her. Save the tears during anti-racist conversation. Black people can't be racist. We're just being reactionary. to the atrocities that have happened to us over the years. The food for thought is this, right? To all those that call themselves allies, in order to graduate to become an accomplice, you first have to address why you feel guilty and what you're guilty about.
And she finished with this, tears without truth reinforce institutional racism. So you're in this position. You're at this high school with how many kids now are there?
About 3,600 kids.
When we were there, it was about 4,000 kids, I think. 3,600 kids. That's a lot of kids.
And what's the Black population?
Just under 30%.
And when we were there, it was 45-ish percent.
When I started here, it was 38%.
38%.
Now we're down between 28 and 30%.
Right. And so you have kids coming from a lot of different experiences. What are some of the things that you're dealing with and you're seeing from your students, from your teachers, and how are you handling all those issues?
Through all of the vitriol that we have seen and experienced since 2020, the murder of George Floyd, the anti-Asian sentiment with the murders in Atlanta, the Amy Cooper incident, Black folks being Black, getting arrested and having the police called on them. It's hard to separate the impact of the pandemic from what we experienced while we were in the pandemic.
We had two pandemics.
And I think what we've all experienced was a degree of vulnerability that we've never seen before. And it was compounded. The vulnerability of COVID, the vulnerability of, in some ways, I mean, I've always known I was Black. But being Black in America at this time, and that means something different than it did in the 90s and it did 10 years ago. It's very different. So I think it's trauma, right? And at that time also, schools were highly politicized. The health and the safety and the well-being of teachers became a highly political topic that weakened morale in districts and in schools all over this country. So how are we fixing that? Is through time and attention and what I would say bell hooks called a critical love, and that what it means to know one another, what it means to be in fellowship with one another, what it means to understand one another, understanding what we've been through, what our experiences are, and sharing that human experience. It's that critical love that bonds us together so that we can heal.
When we take on these new roles, we are often asked about what is our strategic plan? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. We use that time to learn the school, the environment, where the pitfalls are, what teachers we have to deal with, what's the community perception of the school, et cetera, et cetera. You've had an opportunity for 20 plus years to study the school, not learn the school through your strategic plan, although I'm sure you have one. You had 20 plus years to learn the school, to learn the community, to learn its environment. How have you used that historic knowledge to solidify yourself as a new leader of Evanston Township High School?
It's so good, such a good question. I have always said that schooling is a constant study, and ETHS is definitely a constant study. I say that all the time. Because if you don't know that this is study, you'll fall flat.
We'll right study you.
That's right. But knowing that it's fluid, it evolves, knowing the narratives and the story and the history and knowing the community and knowing community leaders and having personal relationships with leaders in the community, having taught their kids. Like I was presenting at District 65 and one or two of my former students walked in as staff at District 65, you know, and that's the beauty of Evanston, right? I'm not from Evanston, but I've been here a long time, and I feel like I'm connected to the community in that way because I taught brothers and sisters and families, and like I know your cousin because I had your cousin too.
It's the beauty of what Evanston can be.
Yes,
it's the wherewithal of Marcus Campbell. See, because you could have chose to be at Evanston for 20 plus years and not got to the crux of how Evanston moves in all of its diversity, Black, white, Latinx, Asian, et cetera. So I'm sorry to interrupt you on that point, but I want the credit where credit should be due.
No, bro, I appreciate
it. You studied seriously, you learned from it, and you built relationships. That's what leadership is.
And let me also say this. You may not be from Evanston, but you're the type of person who is an Evanstonian. Yeah. You're the perfect kind of Evanstonian. Yeah. When you've had an effect and you've changed lives and you've taught people who recognize you however many years later, you're an Evanstonian.
You can go from Seward to Payne. You can go from Jackson to Henman.
Right.
That's right.
You can get in cut and know who the people are, or you can get into bazillion-dollar homes on the lakefront.
It's true. I had them all.
There it is.
And I appreciate that because I think that's who I am, is how I lead. But I tell you too that my dad was a pastor, and my dad would say to me, he said, "You can't pastor if you don't love the people."
Hey, man, say it again.
I know, right? And I said, "Yeah, Dad, I get that." And I just fell in love, and I had a true love for the kids and how they came and how they showed up and the bonds and the relationships. And that was a beautiful thing to me, especially as an early educator, not being from this town, but quickly realizing that there was a lot in me that was already here. And especially my Black and brown kids who were like, "Where are you from?" And I was like, "I'm from Chicago." Oh, okay. Like, we don't know you, but we think we like you kind of thing. And I just love that. I love
that. You have a different swag.
Difference. Yeah, they recognized it right away. And those relationships mean the world to me. They really do.
We have started with our excitement over your job, but we have to get to who you are. Marcus Campbell didn't just start in 2001 at Evanston Township High School. Marcus Campbell comes from people. Marcus Campbell always wanted to be an educator. Why?
So I think about this question a lot because I'm grateful, just deeply grateful for the educators that were in my life. There's a crystal apple behind me on my desk, and I was a Golden Apple scholar. And my English teacher, Betty Miller, you know, she asked me to teach class one day. And I said, "Okay, sure, I'll teach whatever the reading was, and then whatever teaching meant, lead a discussion, whatever it was." And I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I like, maybe I could be a teacher. And she knew right away. She said, You would be a great teacher if you decided to be one. So I believed her, and I enjoyed how that felt. I was at Lindblom Technical High School on the South Side. It's now Lindblom Math and Science. I became a tutor, right, in my high school, peer tutor, right? And then I became the student rep to the board, you know, at her encouraging, you know, and then I went on, I got to go apply for Golden Apple. You know, at one point CPS was trying to shut our school down, and we marched and we protested and did all that, and they kept the school open. And so I guess what I'm saying is the way that I began to understand myself in the world was shaped around a teacher who believed in me that I could be a teacher. Right. So I began to believe that in myself. And I said, "Boy, if I could help other people do like what she helped me do, that would be a great way to have a life." Mm-hmm. And so it's been the joy of my life to be an educator. Went to University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, got my degree in English, minored in education. And then I came to Evanston to teach. And I've been teaching here ever since. And I had a community around me. I had my English teacher around me. In my early days, I had Golden Apple, who put me in a classroom when I was 18 years old, you know, to practice teaching. And I practiced teaching with Golden Apple for 3 summers in a row before I even student taught. So these were the things that shaped me, right? So my identity wasn't shaped around being an administrator or being somebody who's in charge making decisions. It was shaped around teaching and learning and leaning in the classrooms and building relationships with the young people. And when I got to ETHS, people at the school had to show me how to teach. Right. Although I had all of those experiences, I had a lot of veteran teachers. I had a lot of Black faculty, Black staff. I had counselors, older counselors reaching out to me. "How you doing, baby? What do you need?" You know, I had Denise Martin looking out for me when she was the principal at the time. So I had a lot of community who supported me to be where I am because I needed every bit of it and I'm grateful for it.
We realize how important mentors are. That term, that phrase you used, how you doing, baby? For Black folks, that says a whole lot. It is one of the most important questions because it's not just a question, how are you doing? It's like, I'm here for you. I can take care of you. Tell me what's happening. Denise Martin's name, Denise Martin was on our podcast. And since then, her name has come up numerous times in other podcasts. Denise started teaching at ETHS, right? It was her first job as well. And she stayed through. How have you been able to mentor others the way you've been mentored?
It's something that I work at every single day, right? Because I'm no longer teaching like I used to, I have found a way, been finding ways to really connect to the passion of educating, right? So I have had numerous principal interns, numerous superintendent interns, administrative interns, all those kinds of folks. I have supported their programs and I connect with them to this day. I've started adjunct teaching at Northwestern and at National Lewis. And to a lot of the undergrads over there, I'm in touch with them and all in Foster and all of that. But the most promising and rewarding things that has come out of this are the relationships with my former students, particularly Black boys that I'm in touch with today. We talk about everything. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, I was your freshman year English teacher. And now we're talking about, you know, your wife is pregnant. You're getting ready to have a kid. What is going to be like for you? We're still talking about your parents. We're talking about their parents. They're my mentees, right? And it didn't say, oh, I'm going to be your mentor. We just kept in touch, you know? And they kept drawing. They kept pulling. And I kept giving. And they kept pulling. And I just spent time over break. And I had maybe four lunches with four former students, Black, all Black men, in various stages of their life. And we just continued to talk about life.
Sometimes kids have difficulties, not because they don't know how to do something, but because of so many situations without having support in many ways. And with the right support, there's a lot of hope for these kids to be able to reach the sky.
One of the beautiful things about being here, and I'm sure it's true of many educators, is that you see kids and you see student teachers kind of going the extra mile.
Right.
So the second semester, so I'm out and about moving around and we made some adjustments here or there so that the kids can be where they want to be and be with their friends. But also we have like structure in the school. But I saw these kids with passes on their lunch going back to their teachers. I was like, that's a beautiful thing, right? I'm going to go have lunch. This is what I did with Miss Miller. She would smoke her cigarettes and eat lunch and I'd be in there hanging out with her. But that's exactly what the teachers are doing here. There's nothing for me to walk into our director of student activities office and see kids just talking with her. I walked into another person in student activities today on their lunch. Kids were in their braiding hair. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's so life-giving, right? To know that adults are giving in these ways that will never show up on a board report. Will never appear on the Illinois school report card for this high school, but you know that the adults are leaning in every single day, supporting kids in ways that just go above and beyond what the curriculum requires.
So, father was a minister.
Proud dad.
Proud dad. Had a loving mother. God rest her soul.
I rest her soul.
Who is Marcus Campbell outside the education ring?
Oh, man. Outside of education, I think I'm a modeling father. Let's say that intentionally. There's a scripture in the Bible that said that every seed reproduces after its own kind. And, you know, and that tells me that kids don't become what we teach them, but they become who we are. So I have been working really hard to be the best person that I could be, so that my kids could be the best people that they could be, right? And so, because kids watch us, right? And so I just strive to be a good listener, You know, I'm divorced, so I try to be a good co-parent with their mom. Like, I've never said anything negative about their mother to in front of them. I just don't do that, right? So I just try to model and be a human being, not be perfect. You know, when my mother passed, you know, I grieved my mom in front of them because that's humanity, right? So, you know, I try to be a sincere, good person, a modeling father, a good friend, a connected friend. I was a loving son, am a loving son, a supportive nephew. I really, really try. I'm a family guy, right? Like, I try to stay connected to my family, my cousins who are like my siblings, you know, and my friends who are like family, you know. So, and of course, my fraternity, you know, I try to be just good, be a good person. And, you know, I love to read. I love to watch movies, too. I like to kind of escape the world and go to another world in that way. You know, I am a person of faith. You know, there were 7 pastors in my family at one point. I pastored 2 at one point in time. So my faith is really important to me. And, you know, I just try to be a good person, you know.
I'm wondering if you can tell us a story about a success, a real success story of yours, anything that you can think of that is something that was a seminal moment for you.
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind is I got an email from a parent one day, stressed about her son. And she says, my son needs help. This is what's going on. Will you connect with him? Blah, blah, blah. Connect him with someone, et cetera, et cetera. So I said, sure. So I ended up meeting the kid. And the first thing the student said to me was, I'm angry. I said, okay. And then he said, isn't that what it means to be a Black man? And that is to be angry. And I said, I'm going to spend some time with this kid. So we began to unpack that, why he felt that way and how he was constructing as a Black man, Black masculinity, how he was socially constructing that for himself, right? Framed in anger. So we began to talk. And I said to him, why don't you come see me every week, once a week, and we can just touch base. And to make a long story short, I still, going back to the mentoring conversations, I still have regular meetings with this kid who has just graduated in the top of his class from UC Berkeley. And I am super proud of him. I told him that last week at Walker Brothers, how proud I was. He invited me to his graduation at Berkeley, to which he gave the speech. He gave the commencement speech there. And now we just talked about what's next for him. What's next for him? And I just told him, you'll figure it out. And whatever you need, I got you. And that's a success story for me as an administrator, building that kind of a relationship with the student and having that student to really self-actualize in the way that he has. That means a lot.
In 30 years, when you leave Evanston, what will be said about you?
Mm. Wow. That's an interview question that I asked. That's good. That's good. Oh, at the end of my tenure, I would hope that people would say that he made a difference for our family, that he was sincere, he was kind, honest, transformative, brave, a clear communicator, and humble. And they may not mention anything about test scores, but as far as me and my humanity, those are the kinds of things that I would say. As a leader, I would hope that they would say that our kids did better, our school did better, our community did better with him at the helm. Because my predecessor and his predecessor, things have progressively gotten better. And I would hope that under my tenure, that it would also get better.
Thank you.
Rue. I sent the cues, all right.
Omega Psi Phi to the day I die.
Without question. Keep on the
pressure. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Marcus Campbell. He's still making a difference as superintendent of District 202. For more content, please check out evanstonrules.com. or find us at Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Your support means a lot to us as we explore our hometown of Evanston. If you've got any questions, please shoot us an email at info@evanstonrules.com. Ron and I are eager to hear from you, and thank you for being part of the Evanston Rules community. I'm Larice Bell, and for Ron Whitmore, we thank you for tuning in to Evanston Rules.